time is still wrong. I'm like,
okay, Lena. It's very odd that he's not here.
I saw him.
Okay, so there she is, and the second one is in order, and then
the second one has your name on it.
Good morning, everybody. Our facilitator isn't here, but so we're going to go ahead and get started anyway, because we all know each other and we can introduce each other. Welcome to Rockabye Baby, linking MCH and injury prevention for infant safe sleep. We had an idea to bring this session together to try and start a dialogue between the injury prevention community and the maternal child health community specific to safe sleep. And in doing so, we've tried to give you sort of an overview of the epidemiology behind the issue, as well as some of the state and federal efforts going on to address this. And in our panel, we have myself. I'm Lena Camperlengo from the CDC. I'm first presentation that's up here. And we have Mary Overpeck, who will be presenting some of the data from the National Center for Child Death Review. Teresa Covington, that just came out, Terry, sorry, executive director of the National Center for Child Death Review. And Lindsay Myers is right here in Colorado at the Colorado Department of Health. Is it Department of Health? Public Health. Every state calls it a little bit different. And she'll sort of show you how a state angle, how they apply it from a state angle. So in the interest of time, I guess we should just go ahead and get going. Once again, my name is Lena Camperlengo. I work at the CDC at the Sudden Unexpected Infant Death Initiative at the CDC. And I've had about way too many years experience in maternal child health, and there's my bio. All right. I'm gonna give you an overview of our case registry, which was just launched. We just started data collection in January, and Lindsay Myers, right here in Colorado, is one of our grantee states, so she'll actually give you some perspective about that program as well. We have no financial relationships, as my bank will gladly tell you. There's no financial disclosures for any of the speakers, but I think everybody will tell you that again. The objectives for the overall session here, so once you leave at noon, we hope that you'll be able to, you know what, I'm going to move this over here because I can't see my slide. Identify opportunities to link maternal child health and injury prevention, maybe in your community, maybe in your health department, but wherever you are working. We'd also like you to be able to describe how Child Death Review gathers their data and does the process of Child Death Review, as well as describe the purpose of the CDC's case registry. And then finally, to identify some initiatives that are going on around the country on safe sleep. My particular presentation today, I'll talk about the definitions and some of the public health implications of the issue, talk about some of the background activities we've had at the CDC SUID initiative, of which some of you in the audience have participated, what the pilot program is for the case registry, and then progress to date. When we say SUID, or sudden unexpected infant death, at the CDC, we are really talking about an infant that dies suddenly and unexpectedly without an obvious cause at the time of death. So that sort of excludes motor vehicle accidents. We keep trying to challenge the definition. It's like, well, a motor vehicle accident is sudden and unexpected, yes, but the cause of death is pretty obvious before you even go into an investigation. Using that as a definition, then SIDS becomes a subtype of SUID. We stick with the Willinger et al. Definition of what SIDS, sudden unexpected or sudden infant death syndrome, is. And really, I think the key thing here in this definition, there are three components to the definition of SIDS. Definition of SIDS is basically It's a rule-out diagnosis. In other words, we don't know what it is. After looking, we don't know what it is. But that's after an autopsy, after a case investigation, and a review of the medical records. So those three things have to happen. If they haven't happened, then by definition, you really shouldn't call the SIDS. So if there was no case investigation, you really shouldn't call the SIDS because you really didn't look. Another type of SUID is ASSB, or accidental suffocation and strangulation in bed. This is a big diagnosis as well. It includes a lot of different mechanisms that I put up here. It could be suffocation by soft bedding. In other words, infant face down, found face down on a pillow. It can be overlay by an adult or another child or an animal even. Wedging or entrapment between a mattress and the wall, or even strangulation. So all of these mechanisms are combined into this one cause of death called ASSB. And that's how I'll refer to it as ASSB. So in the big scheme of things, there are plenty of types of SUIDs. It's not just SIDS. The top three I just talked about, SIDS, ASSB, the third is cause unknown. But oftentimes, if you're doing reviews at a local level, you'll know there are too many cases where children say overdose on cough medicine, or an infant's overdosed on cough medicine, which would not be sudden. It would be sudden, unexpected, not obvious until toxicology comes back. So that's another example of a SUID case, which would be explained after an investigation. So here we start splitting our cases, explained SUID and unexplained SUID. So at death, you find an infant who has died in their crib and from an overdose of cough medicine. Nobody knows what happened. The child was placed and found on their back. Everything was fine. It's not until toxicology comes back that we find that the child's overdosed on cough medicine. That would be an explained SUID. But there still remains this category of unexplained SUID. And we're moving towards calling it negative autopsy. So there was no findings on autopsy. SIDS, cause unknown, as well as accidental suffocation and strangulation in bed. There are no markers on autopsy for suffocation. So there's nothing to distinguish the SIDS case from a suffocation case at autopsy. We wish there was some kind of test you could do, but there isn't. So what are the public health implications for SUID? There's about 4,600 cases of this general SUID, and I'm talking about all these categories, half of which are SIDS each year. The most frequently reported kinds are SIDS, and just to remind you, it is the leading cause of post-neonatal mortality in the United States. It continues to be. Cause unknown is another category of SUID, and the ASSB actually is the leading cause of infant injury mortality, which I think is very important to our injury community here. And then we have some other types that I talked about, like cough medicine overdose. Just to give you an idea of trends, I guess maybe I do need the pointer here. To give you an idea of trends, about 1992 is when we started becoming aware of the back to sleep. And you can see, orient you to the graph. On the bottom is the year, and here is the rate per 100,000 live births. The yellow line represents a combination of cause unknown and ASSB. The red line represents SIDS only, and the green line represents a combination of both of the red and the yellow line. So we can see this nice decline in SIDS after back to sleep was instituted about 1994. Nice decline that mirrors the overall decline in these types of infant deaths. Then we start to see this straightening out here. It's just plateauing here overall. And what we find is while SIDS is decreasing, the combination of ASSB and cause unknown is increasing. But the overall effect is a flat line for these types of infant deaths. So what are we seeing here? Diagnosis, a shift in a diagnostic shift for the people who certify deaths? That could be. Just to give you an idea, using a pie graph here, in 1996, 84% of these types of SUID were SIDS. And in 2006, we're down to 58. And we just published a paper of using the Department of Justice Census of Medical Examiner and Coroner's Offices, in which 5% of all the medical examiner and coroner offices said, we do not use SIDS at all. That was 2004. We are looking to repeat that survey again, and we expect that number to go up. So there's definitely a shift away from SIDS to cause unknown and ASSB for causes of death. So there definitely seems to be a change in the way that medical examiner and coroners are certifying these deaths. And we're not really sure why, but some of the reasons we think are that we've had better investigations. The CDC came out with a reporting form to collect information at an infant death scene, and that perhaps some medical examiners and coroners are really adhering to that 1991 Willinger et al. Definition, where I said they had to have the three components: autopsy, scene investigation, review of the medical records. Another cause could be the increase in child death reviews going on at a community level, at the state level, in which these multidisciplinary teams are starting to question what was done in the investigation. They're hungry for more information so that they can help prevent these deaths in the future. All right, well, that might be the case, so why should we even be concerned about this change in reporting practices? The reality seems to be that we hear that most deaths are not investigated. At least they weren't even 10 years ago. There's increasing numbers of investigation. And when they are investigated, the cause of death information is not really collected consistently. When I do a training, I give a case example, and I have people go and stand in a corner. Do you think that based on the information provided, which is pretty much what you get at a child death review or a FEMA review, go stand in this corner if you think it's SIDS. This corner if you think it's SUID, over here if you think it's ASSB, or over here if it's cause unknown. And invariably, every training I've done, I have people in every corner. So given the same information, there's a lot of different ways to interpret it based on your past and what your profession is and what perspective you bring to it. There's different ways in which to interpret it, which happens at the death certifier level as well. And in order for us to be able to track these trends and really understand what's happening with these infant deaths, we need some consistency, which is where the SUID initiative came in. And one of our goals was to standardize and improve the data collected at the death scene, as well as promoting the consistent diagnosis in the cause of death, which was easier said than done, improve the national reporting of SUID, and then ultimately prevent these deaths by understanding the risk factors and identifying the populations at risk. Some of the activities we've done at the CDC's SUID initiative, and this is all in the past, and it's really laid the foundation for the case registry we have today. We've revised the 1996 SUIDERF, which is the Sudden Unexplained Infant Death Investigation Reporting Form, and I can't say that in one breath. We revised that in 2006, also developed a training curriculum around that, so that it wasn't just a launch, release, and go forth and do good things. We actually set up training academies around the United States to teach people how to use the form and how to conduct a comprehensive infant death investigation. That's under evaluation at this point. We also conducted a feasibility study to say, is it even feasible to get this information on these SUID deaths, these SUID cases? Can we even gather this information? Does anybody even have it? And luckily, the answer was yes, and our participating seven states, we did this with NVDRS, the National Violent Death Reporting System, and the states that volunteered were participating in NVDRS, and they all gave us some feedback saying, it's wonderful, you should use Child Death Review and not NVDRS. and then ultimately, we developed and have implemented the SUID case registry. Some of the impacts we've had to date, our training curriculum has been endorsed by a number of medical legal professional agencies at the national and international level. And we trained in our training academies 250 trainers. It was done in a train-the-trainer format. Those trainers have gone on to train more than 20,000 medical legal professionals in this, throughout the United States and in communities. We've also integrated this curriculum into academic curricula for American Medical Death Investigator, AMDI. So they've integrated it throughout there. We've also educated many partners who have gone on to educate legislators and push for legislation at a state and national level. And we've encouraged the change in practice and policies at the jurisdictional level. So let me tell you what the exciting part of this all I'm leading up to is the case registry. So the Sudden Unexpected Infant Death Case Registry was launched just this year. We started collecting data, and we did it to really, because we death certificate data told us a little bit, it didn't tell us everything, and it really didn't give us the context of these infant deaths. So there are text fields in death certificates, but people don't tend to use those, or they don't use them consistently. So we really don't know what happened to this infant. Remember those four types of ASSB we had? So did this baby die because they got wedged between the wall and the mattress? Or did somebody overlie on them? Or was it soft bedding? We have no idea from the death certificate, none at all, which is why we needed more information. So we look for a more comprehensive data source, and we really collect information from the death scene. It's a critical part of our data collection, autopsies, and from other sources. The objectives of the case registry really to do state-based, population-based surveillance system, and we've accomplished that in 5 states so far. We also want to monitor. Okay, the second bullet, let me just summarize it. This is individual-based variables. So we started collecting things like, remember that paper that came out about the fan in the room reducing SIDS by 70%? We ask, is there a fan on in the room? Which, and the only way to get that is through a death scene investigation. You can't go back 5 months later and ask a parent, or you can't find it in pediatric record that there was a fan on in the room at the time of the infant's death. So these individual-based variables include infant health questions. Was the child sick in the last 72 hours before death? Did they have any immunizations? What was their last meal? Was it breast milk? Was it formula? So we ask some of this individual level information. We also ask systems level information. What exactly happened at autopsy? Did you take the weights of the spleen, the heart, the organs? Was there a baby gram? And for those of you who don't know, that's a x-ray of the entire baby. Or was there serial x-rays taken? Because we have no idea what's happening at infant autopsies. We also ask what's going on in the death scene. Did you take scene photos? Was there a doll reenactment? So we really get into the systems of who interacted and how did they do it with this infant death investigation. So those are for sort of the second and third bullets. The third one here is, third one, categorize. So with all of this information on what happened at a systems level and an individual level and understanding the context of this infant's death, how can we better categorize? We're not getting rid of ICD-10 codes. They're not going anywhere. But how can we understand and separate these infant deaths into meaningful categories so that we can do prevention efforts? And then ultimately to inform these prevention activities. So our model, our program model, was built on child death review. That's what we heard during our feasibility study, and we had 2 information gathering sessions in Atlanta, and that's what our partners told us is, don't reinvent the wheel. We're already doing this. We're already reviewing these deaths at a community and state level. Let's just layer on some new questions. So we used their pre-existing variables, of which you'll hear more shortly, and we integrated some new questions, such as the fan question that I mentioned. And we wanted to support and really shore up the state's efforts to review all of their SUID deaths in their state, where resources are thin, things kind of get done as they can, and we wanted the funding to be able to let them do every single sudden unexpected infant death, review every single sudden unexpected infant death. And we wanted to strengthen their ability to basically review other deaths as well, and that's what we're finding, is when they're bringing new data to the table, it brings new meaning to other child death reviews as well. So the data sources for the child death review, for the SUID case registry, include the same that are there for child death review, starting from the scene, which is usually the home, in which you hopefully have EMS run reports. The SUID-ERF is that reporting form that CDC has, law enforcement photos, doll reenactment, to what the pathologist brings to it with their toxicology and autopsy reports. And I've been told never ever to use this photo to represent MEs, but I didn't get it out of there fast enough. that death certificates from the certifier, and ultimately to this multidisciplinary team review. Some of the individual-based variables that I've already mentioned a few of, maternal health, what happened during her pregnancy, did she smoke during pregnancy, did she smoke before pregnancy, we're collecting that, newborn screening results, and the sleep environment. And some of the systems variables that we're collecting about what was done at the death scene investigation, and what was available to, we ask a question to the death certifier, did you have access to this information before you called this death, classified this death, and we have a long list of things, including their medical history, scene reports, photos, etc. Just to sort of give you an overview of who comes to a child death review panel, and therefore a SUID review panel, it includes all of these people and often more. During my site visits, I've seen medical students at the table, I've seen pediatricians, always seem to have a medical examiner or coroner at the table. Public health is usually represented. Law enforcement, you hope to get EMS there. It might not be the people who actually investigated that death, but they can give that their perspective in their report. For our case registry, this is basically how the information flows. After an infant dies, the team is notified, and in a lot of communities, this might be by phone call. Sometimes it can be by vital statistics data dump, like once a quarter or once a month. But they're notified of the death, and then they start collecting the information they need to review this death. The team reviews and discusses the death, and they talk about prevention efforts. And then ultimately, that data is entered into a web-based data collection system that is housed with the National Center for Child Death Review. Our state grantees review the data for completeness, so they'll go back and say to the county, you're missing information, go back and find out what happened in the autopsy on this. And once they go through that quality assurance step, then we finally have pooled data, de-identified pooled data sent to us at the CDC. So let me tell you a little bit about when we started collecting data in January. Don't have much to tell you, but I can give you some updates. The states in green are our first round. They started data collection in January, and we had some funding left over at the end of the year. I don't know if any of you got that approved but not funded letter from federal funding before. Don't you love that one? We actually funded the yellow states. We turned around and said you were approved but not funded, and we turned around and we were able to get them funds before the end of the year. So we have New Jersey, Georgia, Colorado, New Mexico, and Michigan in our first round, and we added Minnesota and New Hampshire. And they'll start data collection this coming January. And some of their first year success is just basically year to date. They've improved the timeliness. So where they might have gotten records 4, 5, 6 months down the line, they're getting records within 90 days. When they might have gotten records 3 years down the line, they're getting records within 90 days. Some of them said in order to do that, they pay grant staff in the ME's office, the medical examiner's office, to basically start collecting the data as soon as they know that there has been an infant death. They've improved the death scene reporting quality, and not just what's collected at the scene, but sharing that information, sharing it with Child Death Review, sharing it with a death certifier. They have increased access to autopsy information. They might not always know what the tests are, but that the team can look and see this was done and transcribe it onto our data collection form. And they've implemented these quality assurance measures. So when I finally look at the data, I'm just amazed at the level. There's very few blanks or unknowns, very, very few. So, as of their last quarterly report, which was current as of September 30th, our five states have identified 457 SUID cases. They've reviewed 259, and they've gone back and asked for more information and completed, said these are done, we can't get anything else on them, 119 cases so far. And those are from our five states, Colorado, Georgia, Michigan, New Jersey, and New Mexico. And our final slide is I want to recognize my colleagues at CDC, Carrie Shapiro Mendoza, Shin Kim, Terry Jirogi, our work study student Rebecca Ludvigson, and Christina Rodriguez Hart is our new PHPS fellow. Thank you.
You want to take a couple of questions? We have like 2 minutes.
Okay, 2 minutes. Thank you for keeping track of the time. Sure, I'll take some questions while if somebody wants to pull up the next presentation. Where do we go, the next one? That one? Oh, I pledge allegiance. Oh, next. Thank you.